accession number 28645, rule 25.
I'm sorry, Suzanne?
Are you recording?
We're on now, yes.
Oh, right.
You think he ought to paste it to you?
Well, I can't think of any other way of getting it. Oh, dear.
Tell me about the your receipt of the decoration. Because it has a story attached to it afterwards, or either in front of it or afterwards, doesn't it?
Well, people have been trying to get me a decoration for the last 10 years.
Have they?
Oh, yes. More than 10 years. I mean, important people like the president of the head of Q, the head of the RHS, the head of all sorts of things. People have written.
And you knew that? You knew that they were doing it?
Yes, I heard it through the grapevine. And all sorts of important people wrote recommending me for a decoration, but I never got one. Until last year, when I was decrepit and ill, I got my decoration.
In this year's January honours list, was it not or not?
Last June.
Last June?
Was it the June one?
Well, you were in the January Salisbury Journal, because that's how I found out about you.
I was just too late for the June. That's right. They made it too late for the June. I mean, they put it through too late for the June one. And yes, it was the New Year's honours. That's right. Yeah.
Now, I think you told me that there was a story attached to it where they were trying to ask you for money.
Oh, well, that just shocked me somewhat. I got the notice of, you know, the Queen and her beloved subject and all that sort of nonsense written out and awarding me the MBE. And then there were the enclosures. And the enclosures really astonished me. There was advertising for ties and jumpers and all that sort of thing, which I thought was totally inappropriate when you're sending out an honour. And there was also a request for a donation, a yearly donation, or one could give one donation a once-off if one wanted. It had to be one or the other.
Donation to what?
They've got a society or something. Awardees. I've got it somewhere, but I didn't read it terribly carefully again because I was shocked. I thought to send out an award for services rendered and at the same time to send a bill was a bit odd. Definitely odd. However, that's what they do. I don't know whether you get it with an OBE as well.
A friend of mine has just got one, so I'll ask him.
You're asking if he got a suggestion for a donation with it. But the armorial bearings, they're very expensive. They're £7,000. And then the border was another three.
Oh, we're going back to the society now.
Yes, I mean, things cost. No, I just thought of it because of the request for a donation. Very odd. I thought that ought to go in a separate envelope. You have received an award. May we draw your attention to the society of whatever it is that you pay this thing to. Something like that, something a bit more delicate. Extraordinary.
Now, can I just pause on the tape and I have a suggestion to make. Suzanne, I think what we've decided is that to leave the period 54 to 95 where it stands for the time being, And this afternoon we'll finish with the parts of the story of your family building their house and furnishing it and starting out in every way in Devon when you were 6 and a half. If I think you want to, or when you were 7, when you came back from India. I think you do. You've got something to add there, I think.
Yes, it's very hard for anybody nowadays to have any conception of the primitiveness of everything in those days. We had a beautiful house, beautifully built, and that was fine, but we didn't have any running water. We didn't have any heating, particularly. We didn't have any light. We had no electricity. We did manage to have our telephone installed, which was number 7, which was rather nice. So that was all to be done after we arrived back. So
no electricity, but a telephone. That's an unusual way of going about it.
Yes, it was a bit strange, but we got it. It was number 7. Anyway, so yes, but the electricity for the telephone comes separately.
Yes.
It was one of those stand-up telephones, you know, with a separate earpiece. So all that had to be done. We moved in, and all the piping was there. There was a wonderful big kitchen surrounded with cupboards and with a beautiful large window with a large window shelf in front of it on which to put things. A beautiful, enormous pine table, the sort you scrub with a scrubbing brush and do everything on. And there was, in the corner, there was a brick-built corner which contained a huge copper bowl, which was for the washing every week. You lit a fire underneath it. Then we had a large iron range, which had to be, the fire had to be killed once a week. And then it was done with blacking, black lead, and it on. It was a beautiful sign. It was a gorgeous kitchen. And then outside there was a passageway with a convenient lavatory on one side, and on the other side there was the storage for coal and anthracite for the range. And then after that, that opened out onto a wonderful little avenue of large fuchsia bushes, which of course grew perfectly well in Devon. Quite happily. So there we were, without lighting. So we had oil lamps, and they would be ranged up every afternoon. That was the afternoon job. Be ranged up on the table in the kitchen, cleaned, refilled, and their little chimneys put on, and their shades all ready for the evening to be lit. And that was the only lighting we had, oil lighting. And in front of them there'd be a row of candlesticks with candles all ready, because each person took a candle up to bed.
There was a lot of naked flames about.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed there were. And then, of course, there was the problem of water. We had a wonderful spring way down at the end of the land. Beautiful spring. The water from it was, the drinking water was absolutely gorgeous. We used to bring it up in a pail. And so we were going to connect that. My father decided to connect that to an underground tank. And I remember the tank arriving. It was huge, absolutely huge. They dragged it up the drive, they dragged it over the ground, they dragged it down to the orchard where it was going to be. They dragged it over all the daffodils. It must have been springtime. My mother and I stood there with our arms round each other, weeping, lots of salt tears at seeing all the flowers disappear under this juggernaut. Meanwhile, they dug a huge pit for it, and they dropped it in, and that was fine, and connected it up to the spring, And then they had to do all the connection up to the house, which was yards and yards and yards away. It's a whole field away. So they dug that field, a trench, and on the way they had to dig another pit, a huge pit, into which my father put a dynamo, which was going to pump the water up to the house. It was also going to make electricity. It was going to do both. So we had that huge pit dug, ordered the dynamo, got that going, joined that up to the water, joined that up to the pipes to the house, and started the electricity going. That took weeks. We stood by all the time watching all this going on and various things being smashed on the way. But there we got it, and finally we had our water, which was heated by the range, and we did away with our oil lamps, which was a pity. They were very pretty. As far as the rest of the heating was concerned, it was just open fires. We had an enormous fireplace with a sort of niche on each side where you could sit. And then there was a fireplace in my mother's study and the range, and that was it. And the range heated it heated a lot of the downstairs. It was remarkably effective.
Didn't heat the upstairs?
No. No, the upstairs had no heating at all. We survived. And then, what else? Oh, but then all that was done, and then we had to install the poultry. So there was a huge run made for them. It was as good as being free range, because they had such an enormous run. And we installed a flock of Rhode Island Reds, beautiful fowls. And when they went broody, we didn't slit their throats. We gave them eggs to sit on, and we had nice little chickens. And we always had what we required in the way of poultry for the table. The hens were never killed before they were 4 years old, at least. We let them live, and they went off lay in August, July, August, normally. And during the time they were all laying, we had an enormous pot, like one of those pots that they hid in that fine story of the 40 Thieves. And it looked like one of the 40 Thieves pots, and it was...
like a giant amphora.
That's right. We kept that in the larder. We had a larder, oh yes, with marble shelves. That was all the cooling that we had in the house. And this huge pot, and we filled that up with isinglass eggs. And so we had everything we needed in the way of chickens and eggs and everything else the whole year round. We roasted the cockerels, and when the hens really came to their end, we had boiled fowl, which was very good. And they lived a thoroughly spoiled life. The chickens, they had a lovely time. They were very well fed. My goodness me, they don't feed them on proper stuff. They had mash in the evening, all mixed with kitchen vegetable waste, which they loved. And then they had a wonderful feed of maize. And that was what made the yolks yellow. Gave them their taste. Eggs don't taste nowadays. Just don't. But it was the maize that did it. So that was that. And, then we had a couple. The servant problem was really extraordinary. My mother really did find them. Anyhow, we had this couple. And he was placid and an extremely good gardener. He knew all about gardening. And he had a very lively and bad-tempered wife, and she used to chase him regularly with a broom. And we used to hear them at night in altercation when they'd gone to bed. But they were very good at their jobs. She used to chase us as well when we annoyed her. Mrs. Gale, she was a fine woman. And he did the gardening in, kept the garden in immaculate condition. It was wonderful. We built a wall garden which enclosed about an acre, and great walls about 10 or 11 feet tall. And we grew everything, nectarines, peaches. The pears, they never weighed under a pound each. Williams, all the sorts of pears. Red raspberries, white raspberries, all the sorts of gooseberries, beans, peas. You name it, we grew it. Or he grew it. Absolutely wonderful. We grew Parma violets at the base of the trees, which of course don't grow in the open in England. And we grew lilies of the valley. There were sort of stretches in front of each of the fruit trees, and they were all filled with flowers. It was a magic, magic place. It was lovely. It was beautiful. The nectarines and the peaches. Oh. We didn't grow these yellow things that are like turnips. We grew white peaches, white flesh, absolutely exquisite apricots. I don't know, in the summer we just lived on fruit. Must have been very healthy. Lived on fruit and vegetables. And we never turned up our noses at anything. We weren't difficult. It was placed on our plate and we ate it. Nobody made a fuss. Nobody said, I'm not going to eat that. I don't know what's wrong with children these days. It's most extraordinary. I don't understand it. I mean, we never fussed about what we ate. Meal was cooked, it was put on the table, it was served, and we ate it. It was as simple as that. Can you think what's happened to the children of today? I don't know. And what are children doing walking out at the age of 13? What are they doing walking out on a road at after midnight? What are the parents dreaming about? Anyhow, that's another subject. And so it took us some months to settle in, but we were finally settled in. Then there was the problem of the dogs. My father liked dogs. My mother and I didn't, but that didn't count. So he decided to have a dog. So he got a nice big black retriever. And the retriever came out all over in eczema. So after a month or two, my mother put her foot down. She said she wasn't going to have an eczematic dog any longer, so we got rid of him. So then my father went on yearning for a dog, so he got an Airedale, a very large, fierce Airedale. Well, when the Airedale was in the house, it spent its time chasing the cats up the curtains. And when it was out, it went sheep worrying. So my father finally got a friendly notice in from the farmers that he'd better keep the dog at home because they were going to shoot him. So it was worrying the sheep. So that dog went. Then we got another one, another Airedale. And that spent its time being sick over everything and coming out in boils. So my mother decided to put her foot down again. She didn't often do that. So we got rid of that, and that was the last lot of dogs we had. So after that we had cats. The cats were really very nice, except that they used to come in covered with fleas. And I'm not quite sure what we did about that. They used to catch these fleas from the rabbits they hunted. I think we just sat them on the kitchen table and peeled the fleas off and put them into water, as far as I remember. And then they used to get themselves caught in gins, because, of course, gins were legal in those days.
Gin traps?
Yes. Horrible things. Absolutely horrible. You used to hear the rabbits scream.
These are circular wires.
No, the ones that snap too.
Those are the ones that snap.
Oh, they're not little. They're fierce. They're horrible things. You used to hear the rabbits screaming at night when they were caught. It was very nasty indeed. And sometimes the cats used to get themselves caught in this, and they'd come back with a paw doing this, having been loosed by the farmer. And then my father would get his driving gloves out, which were the big gauntlet ones like that, basin full of permanganate of soda, and in went the paw. The cat was screaming and scratching for dear life. But they never got a poisoned foot. Never. And, yes, we had several cats. One of them had two families, and they were duly spirited away and drowned. And the cat got wise to this, so she thought, I'm not going to do this a third time. And she came into the sitting room one day, plonked herself down on a cushion and had them with me there. So my parents couldn't get rid of them because I'd seen them. Wise cat. Otherwise we didn't. Oh, we had a sheep. Yes, I wanted a lamb. So they duly got me a lamb. But unfortunately the lamb grew up and became a sheep. And it got to a pitch where the sheep was really being rather a nuisance, so we had to give it back to the farmer, and I don't know what happened to it.
It probably came back onto your table.
No, I would think it had lambs. It was a she-sheep. So I think it probably joined the flock and was all right. And, oh yes, and then I said I wanted some pet fowls of my own. Not the ordinary ones that were in the run. So off we went to a farmer. And of course in those days the chickens were running about in the yard outside the farmhouse. So I chose a black one and a white one. And then I spied a large cockerel. And I don't know what he was doing there or why they had him. He was an Indian wildfowl. Tremendous birds with great big heavy legs. I think they used to use them for cockfighting. I have an idea. And he had the most wonderful iridescent feathers and a magnificent comb. He was a splendid bird, and I fell in love for the first time in my life with that. And nothing would do, but we had to take him home. So we thought we'd put him with the hens. We decided after a very short while that we were not going to put him with the hens. He would nearly killed the cockerel who was in possession at the time. So we had to give him a run all by himself. Meanwhile, I had found a rabbit. It was the largest rabbit I've ever seen. And he was fierce. He was a buck rabbit. So he had to have a run on his own next door to the cockerel. I had bad taste even in those days. Chose the wrong type of character. So, and that was the life we lived, and it was a very happy life, apart from when my father got cross, which he did fairly regularly. But he was away a lot of the time because he did his university course and then joined the Air Force.
Then he joined the Air Force.
Became an instructor.